Let's now take a look at scheduling. We've already said that a daily list of removals must be completed and sent to customs, and unless the warehouse keeper is paying the duty under duty deferment, he must pay the duty daily. Where customs authorise a warehouse keeper to carry out scheduling, he gets the best of both worlds. Although he still has to keep a daily record of removals from his warehouse, the list does not need to be submitted daily. Scheduling simply allows the warehouse keeper to submit a schedule of removals twice a month. In addition, payment does not need to be made daily, but once a month. This is how it works. Each month is split into two. In the following diagram, we have the months of January and February. The months are divided into two around the 15th, and the period from the 15th to the end of the month is called period 1. The period from the beginning of the month to the following 14th is then called period 2. A return must be sent for period 1 by the 4th of the month following that period, so in our example, by the 4th of February, and the schedule for period 2 must be sent on a return by the 15th of the month, i.e. by the 15th of February. The payment will be taken by direct debit on the 29th of the second month. The removal form for alcohol products is a W5D. What happens if losses or deficiencies in stock are discovered? The relevant legislation is Regulation 28 of Statutory Instrument 809 of 1988 and Section 94 of SEMA 1979. Losses are quite often discovered when the warehouse keeper is carrying out his stock take. Where the warehouse keeper discovers that losses have occurred, he must inform customs of that fact. This is in accordance with Regulation 12.7 of our statutory instrument. The warehouse keeper should give reasons for those losses, and if the losses are due to natural causes or accident, then customs, under Section 94, may not require him to pay the duty. The losses may also occur whilst the goods are in transit from the excise warehouse to their intended destination. Where these losses occur, if customs are not satisfied that they are due to natural causes or accidents, then the person responsible for paying the duty is the person who has guaranteed the movement. Where goods are travelling towards another member state, then duty will be due in the member state where the loss has occurred. Customs are likely to carry out periodic checks on the trader's premises, his controls in place, and his computer accounting system to ensure that excise duty has been properly accounted for and to ensure that losses do not occur. Our final look at excise warehousing concerns removal of goods to ship stores. A vessel with authority from customs can receive excisable goods duty-free where they are to be kept as stores. When these goods are removed from the excise warehouse for use as ship stores, they are treated as an export, and therefore no excise duty is payable. Documentation must be completed in order that no excise duty is payable. This can be in the form of commercial documentation, which must contain the reference number of the supplier, a description of the goods including their commodity code, the date of removal of the goods, and the name and destination of the vessel. This document needs to be made out in four copies. Copies 1, 2, and 3 travel with the goods, and copy 4 is kept by the warehouse keeper. Copy 1 will be for use by customs before the goods actually board the ship. Copy 2 is signed by the master of the ship and returned as a receipt to customs, and copy 3 is kept by the master of the ship. Our final look in this lecture is at a House of Lords case. It concerned the point at which excise duty would be due. The facts were as follows. The warehouse keeper delivered vodka from its excise warehouse to carriers acting for a company which exported vodka to Belgium and Spain. Duty wasn't paid as the goods were destined for consumption in another member state. The documents provided to the warehouse keeper were fraudulent and the vodka never reached its intended destination. Article 6.1 of Council Directive 92.12 provides that excise duty is chargeable at the time of release for consumption. This includes any departure, including irregular departure, from a suspension arrangement. The relevant UK legislation, according to customs, was Regulation 4.2, paragraph A of the Excise Goods Holding, Movement, Warehousing and REDS Regulation, which said that the duty point was the time when the excise goods are delivered for home use from a tax warehouse or are otherwise made available for consumption. The tribunal agreed with customs and held that the warehouse keeper was liable to pay the duty. The case went all the way to the House of Lords, which agreed with customs that the warehouse keeper was liable for the duty. The goods were made available for consumption. The identity of the person who made them available was unknown, but the regulation did not require them to be made available by anyone in particular. This gave effect to Article 6.1 of the European Directive. Once Regulation 4.2 had been identified as the correct regulation specifying the duty point, Regulation 5 said that the person liable for the duty was the warehouse keeper.